Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we have got a conversation we're going to be having today with Dr. Kenneth Condrell, and we're going to be discussing kids. And I think this is an important topic because, my goodness, so many of us have families, and we're always wondering, how can we deal with certain issues that we're going to be involved with? They're related to our own kids. How can we handle it? What can we do? And we've got a number of things we're going to talk about. By the way, this broadcast is coming to you from Anchorage, Alaska, live. And I'm looking out at the Cook Inlet right now. And Dr. Kenneth Condrell, where are you located?
I'm in Buffalo, New York, which is sometimes referred to as Alaska in the middle of our winters. It's a good warm day today.
Oh, it's just gorgeous here in the far north. So here we are with a broadcast coming from Anchorage, Alaska, the guest in New York, and the studio in California. So it's just absolutely incredible what we're able to do today because of technology. I'm so grateful for it. Dr. Condrell, I want my audience to know that you're a psychologist. You've been in private practice for well over 35 years. Currently, you're the clinical assistant professor with the Department of Psychiatry, the School of Medicine at the State University of New York in Buffalo. You have been on all kinds of major shows and programs throughout the many years that you've been involved in your practice, but you really are dedicated to kids. And I like to know why people choose the directions they do. What was it, what experience or experiences caused you to make a choice about working with kids and their parents?
Well, I think I was a 19-year-old wondering what in the world am I going to do with my life when I received a brochure in the mail about a special program run by the University of Michigan to turn around delinquent boys. And the brochure said I could make some money, I could get graduate credit, and I could learn an awful lot about kids. I thought, well, I'll try this. Well, when I went up there, it was fantastic. I was exposed to some of the best people, some of the best professionals in the country working with kids. And Donna, it turned me on. I went back 3 more years after that, and I decided I wanted to really be a child psychologist and family therapist.
Now, whenever I'm talking with families in various environments, as I know you experience frequently, there are so many different issues that parents are concerned about. And in your book, The Unhappy Child, What Every Parent Needs to Know, you do something that I think is quite interesting. You have broken down 10 different categories, and of course, there probably could be a lot more, but you'd be writing for the rest of your life. You'd never be able to come up for air. But you have been able to put together 10 categories, and they're significant. And at the end of each of your chapters, you have a list of reference materials that people can go to if they want to add more to their level of knowledge and understanding. And I thought that was a very good thing to do because so many times we need to have other people's perspectives. And I really think that's a great way to do it. Now, you have 10 categories in your book, and I'm going to just mention them quickly. Mismanaged divorces, depressed parents, children who feel like failures, peer rejection, peer cruelty, quarreling parents, parental favoritism, permissive parenting, stepfamily, sibling abuse, and the angry parent. Now, I know we're not going to have enough time to go through all 10, so I hope you don't mind. I'm going to pick out a few of my favorites.
Well, let me tell you how I got to that, I think, because that's an interesting story. I began to look over my career, and I realized just about every family that came to see me started off with the statement, "Doctor, all I want is for my child to be happy." And the reason those parents were there is that they knew their kid was unhappy, but they were stuck, and they were asking me to figure it out. And little by little, I began to realize that there are basically 10 causes of unhappiness in children that most parents overlook. So bang, I got this idea for another book. If I could make parents aware of what they're not aware of, they could then do some detective work and figure out why their children are unhappy and help them before they got depressed. And that's how this book came about.
When someone becomes a parent, many times it's not planned. Other times it is planned. Many couples today are waiting to have their children. They're not having children when they're real young. They're going to college, they're getting their education, and then when they decide to have a child, many times they're only having one, sometimes two, and that's it. They don't want any more than that. We have a very interesting situation relative to that, because on one hand, we have people who have become educated, who have been willing to do certain things in life to make sure that they are going to really know that they want to have kids. We have a whole bunch of people that haven't a clue that have kids. And I think that's so important in your book. You talk about a toxic environment we have for kids today, and I couldn't agree with you more. I think there are so many things that go on in the world today, and adults, they need to have an understanding of what it is to raising a kid. The pregnancy is the easy part. It's the 20 years after that you're dealing with.
There are many, many parents, millions of parents who do a wonderful job raising their kids. They're real heroes because it's a difficult time to raise kids. But there are many parents, unfortunately, who become mom and dads, and they don't have a clue what they're in for. They know practically nothing about kids. And in fact, they don't even know what they don't know. And they get themselves into so much trouble, and they begin to be raising a new set of misfits for our society. And it's a very sad thing to see.
You bring up some components that I think are so invaluable. You say the decay and dysfunction of the family and many of the social problems we have in communities that are just growing and growing and growing. You have said there's a new level of deviancy and disturbance never before seen by adults who work with children, and I'm aware of that. You talk about the lack of adult supervision and time being spent doing constructive activities. We have got such a hodgepodge of confusion among the adults. When you have that kind of an environment among the adults, you can't very well pass along a whole bunch of positive stuff to the kids. So you bring out these points very well, that a child unprepared by parents to cope successfully with life outside of the home is going to be, using your word, in a misfit designation by the people that they are involved with.
That's correct.
As well as wondering, gee whiz, why, how did this happen to me? So it's a vicious circle. It keeps perpetuating itself.
I find it helps parents to realize that they are their child's first teacher, and their home is a classroom, and their major goal is to get their youngster ready for life.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you keep focused on that, you're focusing on teaching them skills and manners and self-discipline and how to get along with other people, and you sort of have a knowledge, a curriculum of what you have to teach, and you help your youngster become more confident and more independent with each year. And so I find it very valuable for parents to think of themselves as teachers, getting their kids ready to someday live on their own.
Absolutely. That is a must-do. You have some compelling stories, and one of them in the book was about a single mother. Now, she wanted a child so badly that eventually she adopted a baby girl from Vietnam. No, she wasn't a baby.
She was 1 year old.
1 year old. That's right. She was 1 year old.
Mm-hmm.
And the time you saw this mother and child, the child was 6 years old, and the mom was just beside herself, and it hadn't even crossed her mind about what had happened to this child before she had gotten her. and that there was a cultural background. Tell that story, because I think that's so significant.
It was wonderful the way this lady went to Vietnam to adopt the baby that she really, really wanted. But she got a child, eventually, out of an orphanage that was understaffed and overwhelmed. And so she basically got a deprived, neglected baby. And without realizing this, she comes home to the United States and puts this youngster into daycare and goes back to work full time. So now this youngster is in daycare 5 days a week from 6:30 in the morning to 6:30 at night. And so the youngster never connects up with her. So the next thing I know, she's in my office and saying, this child is angry. This child doesn't listen to me. This child is no fun to be with. And she never, never realized that she basically had a child that she had never bonded with.
Mm-hmm.
She needed to stay home. If she was going to adopt a child with that background, there was no way she could really do everything that she was doing before. And so it was quite a shock for her.
Now, how did she adapt to that? What evolved so that this was a happy ending here?
Yeah, she made some major changes in her life, and she began to make the child more of a priority. I think she took a sabbatical from her business and began to spend more time, nurtured a relationship with that youngster. The youngster began to connect up with her. You know, when children are happy and they feel loved, Donna, they cooperate. They want to please their parents. And when they feel ignored or deprived, they get angry and they become very confrontational. They're no fun to be with under those circumstances. So she was able, it was hard for her to hear this, and she had a lot of guilt, but she was able to learn from some of the feedback I gave her and bring this situation around.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk for just a minute. By the way, for those of you listening, we're talking with Dr. Kenneth Condrell, The Unhappy Child. Now, when you wrote this book, every child's going to be unhappy once in a while. We're not talking about, gee whiz, I didn't go to the movies type of unhappiness. We're talking about situations that really need to be addressed by parents who perhaps do not understand what's going on behind the scenes. You have a chapter on depressed parents, and this is a big one. I've seen so many things evolve because of that. Let's just chat about this a little bit. What prompted you to put this one together? What particular case comes to mind relative to this?
There are like 19 million adults in this country who are depressed. And depression, Donna, sneaks up on you. I mean, you don't really know you're depressed for some time. It just grows gradually. And when you're depressed, all you can think about is what's not right. And all you can think about is how you're not a very good person. And you become demoralized. And you become obsessed with negativity. And you can't really nurture anybody because you're so wrapped up in yourself and you begin to withdraw. And so lots of times I would see these youngsters who felt unloved and who felt that their parents, their mom or dad didn't love them. But the reality of it all was that the parent had a depression. And it's very hard to be a giving, patient, nurturing, loving person when you're into a depression. So parents need to own up to the fact that, hey, lots of people get depressed. Tipper Gore had depression, Mike Wallace, Rosie O'Donnell. It's out of the closet right now. Nothing to be ashamed of. And your family doctor can help, you know, give you a screening test, get you some help. We can really treat depression very well. And you see, as an adult, as a mom or a dad, you set the tone for the entire family. And if you're into a depression, the whole family is doom and gloom. And that's why it's so important for parents to take care of their mental health.
I agree. Now, you make a statement in your book that I found quite intriguing, that 90% of the calls to your office for help are made by women.
Yes.
And usually their companion or their husband comes in very reluctantly. It's like they're under a threat of some kind or another before they'll even do this. Why do you think that's the case?
Women are intuitively very sensitive to what is going on within their children and within their family, and most of them are very willing to take some steps to fix it. So they will bring in their husband and bring in their children. Men have a way, not that men can't be sensitive and caring and intuitive, but generally men will minimized. Well, he's just a boy. It's a stage, you know. Well, I bet you by next year he'll be doing much better. Where women tend to see the seriousness of all this much easier, and they will do something about it.
You say that it's important for parents to have time for themselves, and you especially were making that statement for the women. Because in our world today, a woman is supposed to be superwoman. She's supposed to hold down a job. She's supposed to be a mother. She's supposed to be Miss Super House Cleaner. She's supposed to be all of these things. And frankly, that is just impossible.
You know, Donna, when I give talks to parents and I get on to the business of making your marriage a priority, that so many people, when they become a mom and dad, forget that they are a husband and a wife, I get this bored look from parents like, yeah, we know, let's go on. But they minimize this. Your marriage, your love for each other sets the tone for the entire family. The best thing you can do for your kids is to keep your marriage alive. Because that sets the whole atmosphere for everything that's going to go on. And so it is easy. I mean, I know from my own personal experiences and through the kids I work with, it's easy to lose track of being a husband and wife and just be overwhelmed with making a living and running a home and taking the kids all over the place. But parents have to nurture their relationship. That's why the main reason why we have so many divorces, because it's like having a plant that has no sunshine and has no water, and eventually it just dies, you know, and you've got to take care of that plant. You have to take care of the romance, the connection in your marriage.
I loved your story about yourself, where when you were a young child psychologist, you used to go skiing with a pediatric neurologist.
Yeah.
You've got to share that one, because I thought that is so human, that's so real.
Well, we were seeing a lot of kids with learning problems. And, of course, kids with learning problems feel so quickly overwhelmed by hard tasks. And so they either daydream, or they just remove themselves from the classroom, or they don't want to think about what's going on. Well, that night, my friend, the neurologist, and I got into an advanced ski class by accident. And suddenly, we were feeling like jerks. We couldn't do what they wanted us to do. And we were feeling quite inadequate, just like kids who go to school and can't keep up. So when nobody was looking, we skied away into the darkness and went off by ourselves. But we thought, you know, this is what our kids do all the time. You know? They're over their heads, and so they avoid the lesson.
Yes. Now, you have a chapter about children who feel like failures, and I don't know a kid in the world that doesn't go through this.
Yeah.
Every single one of us have these experiences where we feel like we're king or queen, klutz of the universe. So parents deal with this, and there are some parents that will say, well, of course you're a klutz. You're a real idiot. What else would you be if you wouldn't have failed if you weren't? That's how some parents will respond, because maybe that's how they were treated. And others will say, well, gee whiz, what do you think about this? What's the good out of this? What can you learn from it? What can you do? You know, don't encourage them to run away from it, but to help them face it. That's a tough call. And this is something where children need to know about failure. This is not a bad thing. I mean, we all go through life falling flat on our face and whatever else.
Well, somehow, I don't know how it happened, but in our educational system, we've got it across to kids that to make mistakes is something to be ashamed of. When in reality, what we should tell our children is you can't learn unless you make mistakes. And every time you make a mistake, you get that much closer to getting it right. But we take this negative approach. But when I wrote the chapter on children who feel like failures, I was thinking mainly of wonderful kids who basically are slow learners. And so they go to school every day, and they're at the bottom of the class, and everybody's ahead of them. And they become so demoralized, and they feel so bad about themselves, unless their parents catch on to this and begin to help them along to feel successful. So those are the kind of kids that my heart really goes out to. These are youngsters who are at the low end of the average range, and they have different talents, and that's one of the ways you help them. You find the special interests, the special talents they have outside of school to help compensate for the frustration they're going to feel in the classroom.
Yes, and when you can find out their strengths,
mm-hmm.
when you can find, maybe they've got a mechanical ability. I know there was a child in our family when we were growing up. This was a young boy that had such mechanical, creative aptitude
mm-hmm.
and never, ever was that encouraged because in the family it was considered just non-academic and that's ridiculous. We just don't go there. That's menial. Well, that's the most ridiculous attitude you can ever have.
You know, Donna, one of the best things parents can do if they have a slow learner is to accept it. Because if the parent doesn't, they're always communicating to that youngster, you're a disappointment to me.
Mm-hmm.
You really are letting me down. That is devastating. So coming to terms that every one of your children cannot be a genius is very, very important. You have to deal with the individual differences in your family, you know.
Yes, and be happy with them. And I liked what you said about education, finding a right school for your child.
Mm-hmm.
I think of a single mom I've known for years. Her son is so bright. He was having a terrible time in school, and she said, we're going to find the right school for you. She did, and that kid turned around like you wouldn't believe.
You know, a good parent is an advocate. They are out there. You know, making things happen for the children, and they're cheerleaders. They cheer the kids on, and it sounds like your friend is one of those really, really good parents.
Oh, yes, and it has been amazing how the turnaround in the child occurred. In fact, the interest and intelligence level really came out because she said, this is the kind of structure he needs. And It worked. They had to wait a year to be able to get into the school, but it was really good. Now, something that is not pleasant to discuss, and that is peer cruelty, peer rejection. I can remember when it happened to me as a child. I can remember how devastating it was to me. And I can remember the various experiences and how there was no one that I could talk to about this. And kids are going through this. Kids are not necessarily the nicest people in the world, especially with their own peers. And you have all kinds of variables. What can parents do with this so that it enables the youngster to realize that they can stand up for themselves?
Yeah.
They don't have to be beaten and down and to be, you know, treated like a doormat.
Peer cruelty, Donna, is at an all-time high. And it's only in the last 10 years that we have become aware of what peer cruelty does to children. It damages their personality. And the way we learned about it is through all those awful school shootings. When those kids who did all the killing were examined, they were children who had been mistreated, abused, rejected, shamed, humiliated, until their rage came out in the form of revenge and suicide. So suddenly, what teachers and parents were thinking was normal, kids pick on each other, we began to learn that picking on each other really damages a child's personality. They begin to believe what the bully is saying, and they begin to fall apart. So fortunately, we have a lot of schools today who have bully programs, and they are alert to this going on. They have taught kids that, look, you can, there's more of you in this school than there are bullies. So if you all come together and stop being observers and passive observers and stand up and say no to the bully, you can help rid this school of kids who are mean. So that's just one of the ways. But what I tell parents today is don't let it go. Go right to the school and ask the principal and the teachers and the school counselors to be alert to this and to begin to take action to stop it. And most schools today will do something for you on this.
I loved your chapter on permissive parenting. I'm telling you, I've seen so much of this, and parents, I don't know why, they seem to think that children automatically come in with the brain power that they should understand everything you say. They don't. They have to go through these growing and learning curves and exploration curves and disruptive curves, and that's just part of growth of a human being.
I have a story for you. I asked a mother the other day, she has a 7-year-old child there. I said, well, what's your bedtime? Oh, when she feels like it. When she feels like it. That just, you know, I got more stories like that. I I don't blame parents for this. A whole group of psychologists came on the scene some 25 years ago and taught parents to be afraid.
Yes.
To scold them, to punish kids, is to damage them. And so you've got to tiptoe around them and have a democratic family and don't punish and make deals for everything and keep them happy. Well, it was the worst advice in the world.
No kidding.
Yeah.
And we're suffering from that, and I watch him trying to intellectualize with a three-year-old, and I go, excuse me?
Oh, yeah.
You can't do that with a three-year-old.
I know. Treating the child like a little adult. They expect to have a rational discussion, and for the little three-year-old to say, oh, I didn't know that I shouldn't have a popsicle before dinner. Thank you for telling me that. Now I won't ask you anymore.
It doesn't work that way.
I know. But you see what's happening also is parents are so overworked, and both parents are working, that when they do come home, they often say to me, I don't want to make him unhappy with rules or consequences. I don't want him to get upset with me. And so they give in to kids, which has a lot of bad ramifications, because now they go to school and they feel the teacher's mean when she or he, you know, sets a limit or feels out of punishment, you know.
And all of a sudden it's like, well, my mother doesn't do this,
yeah,
or my dad doesn't make me do this. And the teacher has to say, excuse me, this is a different world you're in right now.
Go ahead.
Just a delight having you on the show. And your book is so filled with information. And when I look at our world today, and so many teachers get so upset because they say, we can't do anything in the classroom. Anything we do is just, it's like a vicious circle. So
it is.
When we can assist and help people to understand that making children accountable, holding them responsible, giving them standards, being able to be a good example ourselves, we better do it first. It really does make a difference, but lots of times you don't know.
You honestly
don't know. You haven't had an example. And that's where your book, The Unhappy Child, What Every Parent Needs to Know, is such a good resource.
Well, thank you. It really is. And if parents want to know more about it, they can get on my website, goodparenting.biz. But I'd like to close with a quick story about a little 8-year-old boy who had the gall to say to his teacher, if this is your job, and you get paid for it, how come we have to do all the work? Could you ever imagine telling your teacher that one?
Oh, I love it. I love it. That sounds like something out of a Bill Cosby show.
It does.
It really does. It's like one of his children saying, excuse me, but we're paying you. You should do the thinking for me. Thank you very much. And here's my homework. You finish it. I mean, I just think that's precious. I think it's absolutely priceless.
It's true. It's a real story.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Dr. Kenneth Kundrell has been my guest. Go to his website, goodparenting.biz. Goodparenting.biz. And his last name is spelled Kondrell. If you're a teacher, if you're a parent, if you are so frustrated and you just feel like you need some support, maybe you want to cry help in capital letters, check out his website, check out his material. He's put a lot of heart into it, but there's a lot of good common sense mixed in there in large doses. Dr. Kundrell, thank you so much for being my guest today.
It's been a pleasure, and thank you so much for all your kind words. Take care.
I will. You too. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. Good things coming up.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. Telephone number is 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756. You know, wherever I am, I can do this by phone. I mean, I talk with people from all over the world with private counseling. So if you want to call in on the show, it doesn't cost you a nickel. All you need to call in to is 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Also, Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And then we have a direct line of 530-876-3222. Now, all you need to do when you call in is give me your first name, your initial. After that, let me do my thing, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything you like. It's fun, it's interesting, and I guarantee it's painless. And it is just utilizing my informational resource capacities. So the phone lines are now open. They're going to be open for the next half hour. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. Now, I want to give you quickly the itinerary that is coming up for me. Right now, I'm in Anchorage, Alaska, and if you are in Alaska and you are listening to me, I'm in the city of Anchorage, and I am going to be available for counseling. If you want to reach me locally in Alaska, it's 907-277-9501, or you can call my office at 800-872-8852. Then, when I get back to my home office in the Pacific Northwest, I'm going to be preparing for another journey that is going to be taking me to Tampa, Florida. Yes, and I'm going to be not just involved with Teresa Tapp with her wonderful physical spa and activity that's going to be down there, which, by the way, go to her website, ttap.com, go under the events calendar, and you'll find out about this annual event that we're going to be broadcasting from when the first part of October comes along. Then on September the 27th, I got a little bit ahead of myself there, on September the 27th, for those of you in Washington, I'm going to be doing an appearance at the Boeing Parapsychology Expo. That's the Boeing Parapsychology Expo. Now, you'll find out information in my newsletter about this event, which is going to be held in Kent, Washington, at the Kent Commons. That's the locale where it will be. So you can go to the Boeing Parapsychology Expo.com. You can just type that in and Google will find it for you. Or you can go to my website, check out my newsletter for this month, and you'll have all those details. After I go to Tampa the first part of October, I then, within a couple of weeks after that, will be in San Francisco. So we're going to be talking about the Wisdom Festival. This is a marvelous event. Speakers coming in from around the country. I also will be speaking there. But this is an event being held at Fort Mason, a phenomenal place. And there's going to be all kinds of people, all kinds of activities. And I just invite you to come on. If you're in that area, just know that we'd love to have you come out. Tell your friends. It's the 17th, 18th, and 19th of October. So this microphone is going to be traveling to different parts of the country, and who knows, I may be back in your neck of the world somewhere. But you just have to stay tuned to find out about all kinds of good things that are going to be made available to you. Now, again, give me a call if you want to chat, 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756, and 530-876-3222. I wanted to share some unique information with you. When I'm in Alaska, and I have been traveling up to this phenomenal state for years on business and broadcasting and meeting with clients, to me, it has just a magic about it. So anybody that ever wants to take a cruise, ever wants to come up here, I always say, please do it, because it has a magic of its own. But I came across some information here that really was quite astonishing to me, and it is perplexing to a lot of federal biologists who are trying to figure out why some black-capped chickadees and other birds are growing deformed beaks. Nearly all the species, are year-round residents. So these are birds that are staying in the environment. And the scientists are very concerned that this unique bill overgrowth is just something that's a signal of a symptom of something that's changed in the environment, and they don't know what it is. And I've got a picture of the bird in front of me, one of these black-capped chickadees, beautiful little bird, beautiful coloration. And the upper part of the beak has grown over like a hook, and it's long and extended. You know, you see some of the little hummingbirds that have the very long feeder type of a beak. Well, it's that long, and it's maybe even longer than that, and it's curved under. And then the bottom portion of the beak is going underneath it and curling up. And it is so unusual because these birds do not have this size of beak normally. And the abnormal beaks, they say, are not that common among the adult birds. It's about less than 0.5% in the normal populations. Now, this has been given a label. This beak deformity is called the long-billed syndrome. And it just recently was documented in adult chickadees in Alaska at 8.1%. Now, what makes this so significant is that this is 4 times higher than the highest ever recorded among adults in other parts of the United States, and the highest recorded within a wild bird population anywhere. They're finding also that there's other species that are developing beak deformities. This is occurring in downy woodpeckers, northwestern crows, stellar jays, and black-billed magpies. This is within the state of Alaska. And they say it's the severity of this is varying from nearly indiscernible overbite to beaks that are more than double their normal lengths. And often the upper and lower parts of the beak are frequently crossed or they're gapping. They have a very difficult time, you can imagine. If you could see the picture of the bird that I have in front of me, they can't forage, they can't keep themselves clean, they can't take care of themselves because the beaks are so abnormal, so they're going to die. Now, they're trying to figure out what's causing this. And the birds are not developing these deformities as babies. They're developing them as adults. So they say they don't think it's genetics. So they're trying to figure out if there is an environmental contaminant, what that contaminant is, if there is a nutritional deficiency, or if there is a particular disease that is attacking them. So they figure that this is unique to Alaska and perhaps even the Pacific Northwest. Now, this is what's happening with the USGS. They are asking the public to help determine how many birds are affected and where they live, and what they want you to do is report it to them. So I'm going to give out this website because I think it is important. Anything, if you see anything that's unusual, for those of you that love to watch birds, if you find a bird that maybe is dead, that has a very odd beak to it, it would be good to report it to the department that is going to be able to help figure this out. Sometimes Mother Nature goes haywire. Sometimes we're the cause of that abnormality. So we need to find out how these birds can be saved and how they can go back to being healthy. So what you go to, and this is http://2/, and this is the address that you'd send it to, alaska.usgs.gov/science/biology/landbirds/beak_deformity/observer-report http://www.http://.html. Now, I know that's a lot, so let me give it to you again. http://alaska.usgs.gov/science/biology/landbirds/beak_deformity/observer-report.html. So for those of you living in parts of the United States, this may not affect, but if you're living in Alaska or if you know of anybody in the Pacific Northwest, this is something that is important. It really is. And, you know, if we don't look, if we don't know to look, we may not be able to see. Donna Sebo here. We're going to be taking a break. I've got some other good things I want to share with you. So when we come back, we'll do exactly that. And if, hey, if you want to talk to me, you can do that too. Telephone number to call into, 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. Telephone number is 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756. Now, tomorrow we are going to be talking with Phil Cousineau. We're going to stoke your creative fires. Yes. You feeling burned out? Do you sometimes wonder if you've even got any imagination left in you? Are you just all dried up mentally? Well, Phil's going to give us some real good suggestions on how you can perk up, spark up, and get those creative juices flowing again and realize that where you are is just a temporary stage and you can fix it. So we're going to be talking about that tomorrow. Also, I wanted to let you know about my guests upcoming next week. We're going to be talking with Bob Gebling, the mental environment. Aha, yes, that's going to be a good one. And then on the 23rd, we're going to have an open mic day. On the 24th, we're going to be talking with Russell Targ, Do You See What I See? Now, for those of you who may not be familiar with Russell Targ, he has been involved and worked with the CIA. This is a man that has a phenomenal history with the paranormal, UFOs, developing mind skills. I mean, his research in the powers of the mind is just awesome. This is his story as to how he got there, so you're not going to want to miss it. And then Doctors, Lawyers, Indian Chiefs with Tom Benjay. That's going to be next Thursday. My goodness, we're going to be talking about Native Americans and the contributions that they have made, and especially from a particular school. So we'll be talking about that, and then a repeat guest of mine, Bill George, we're going to be talking about True North. Now, he came out with this book, True North, And I had him as a guest on my show, and now he's got a workbook. And, oh, we're going to talk about this. This is something that you can utilize. This is a very, very brilliant man, and we have a chance to have him on the air. And I'm sure if you're in business, if you're a person that's wanting to make differences, a different change in your life, if you're wanting to stand up and be who you are as an individual, by golly, this is a great tool to use. So that is what is coming up in next week, and I'm looking forward to sharing that with you. Now, again, give me a buzz if you want to chat, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. I came across a quote by Desmond Tutu. Now, this is a man who is a cleric. He's an apartheid activist. He's won the 1984 Nobel Peace Prize. He was the winner of the 2005 Gandhi Peace Prize. This is a man who has worked very diligently to the best of his capacities and experience to try to make a difference. But I really liked what he had to say. He said, each one of us can make a contribution. Too frequently, we think we have to do spectacular things. Yet if we remember that the sea is actually made up of drops of water, and each drop counts, each one of us can do our little bit right where we are. Those little bits can come together and almost overwhelm the world. Each one of us can be an oasis of peace. The wisdom in those words is ageless. You've heard me say it on the air in multiple ways, but it is important. You are important. Why are you important? Because there's nobody else like you on the planet. Each and every human being is literally a cellular being of uniqueness. And in that, you need to be feeling good about who you are. And you need to make it okay you go through some challenges in life so that you can find out more of what you really enjoy and really where you want to put yourself. I wish I could say that life can be sort of like a Cinderella story. Well, I guess it can. If you remember, Cinderella did a lot of floor scrubbing and took care of a lot of grumpy, grudgy work before the Prince Charming in her life came into play. Frequently, we have to walk a road of experience that demands we test ourselves. And what I find so interesting is that many times we put ourselves in situations so we can find out about what we like, what we don't like, what we do well, what we don't do well. And our choices and our decisions, hopefully, as we mature, we become more conscious of. We're not just going to operate like a robot. We're going to think about the consequences. We're going to ask who, what, where, when, why. Is it necessary? What is it that I need to, you know, to evaluate? It's so important to be able to do that. If you think that you're insignificant, if you think that you're not making a difference, then I want to encourage you to invest in yourself so that you will feel like you can. And one of the best ways to invest in yourself, I believe, is education. And you can go to a library, you can go after a PhD, you can go to seminars, I don't care how you do it. But read, open your mind, be a part of different groups, have discussions. One of the most interesting aspects of life, I think, is that when you go out and you explore and you investigate and you question and you go, I wonder about that, you find what you, again, like and what you don't like. You may find you can't bake a pie worth a hoot, but by golly, you may be the best hand glider in the world. You might find that you don't sew a straight line and you could care less, but you may know how to take care of a sick child. There are so many things that we can do. And when we take the time to educate ourselves, when we take the time to be open and receptive to knowledge, when we take the time to examine and invest in us, there really is a time as individuals when we need to be totally selfish, I believe, when we need to put time, effort, and energy into ourselves, so that then we can go out into life and can really contribute. I've read story after story after story, not unlike Dr. Kondrell's story. He went to a camp when he was going to college, primarily because they were going to pay him for his time when he was there. And he says, oh, this is cool. I'm going to do it. Because he did it, he took a step outside of the norm. He came in contact with an environment totally foreign to him, but one that he found gave him a purpose. And so he ended up dedicating and still dedicating his life to the world of children. I know of a woman who's going to be a guest on my show, hopefully this next month, who's traveled to third world countries and has done stuff that I don't know many of us would want to do, including laying in a ditch terrified that her life was going to end because of a misfired bullet. She's a reporter, but she has a passion for what she does. And it's something where, by her writing, she is reaching the hearts and minds of millions of people around the world because she is able to see what we cannot see. Don't ever think that who you are doesn't make a difference. But if you want to feel good about who you are, invest in yourself. I know I've said it more than once just the past few minutes, but self-investment gives you the greatest return. So if you have those dollars, you have the time, you have the energy, make the effort to invest in yourself. Put yourself in the company of people that give standard and value, that you respect, that you admire. Look for the mentors. Be tutored. Don't be afraid to learn and grow. And above all things, remember, you and your mind belong to you, not to anybody else. They're yours. And life can throw you some curves sometime, but by golly, when it gets down to the bare bones of existence, it's the investment you make in yourself that makes you the most valuable. It's very important. It makes a difference. It really, really does. I know it's made a big difference in my life, and I want you to know that if you continue to invest in yourself, hey, you're going to be one of those priceless individuals because you're going to have nothing but the very best to give back to life. And that's what living, I think, is all about, giving your best. This is Donna Siebel, and I know we're just about out of time here. Don't forget, tomorrow my guest is Phil Cousineau, Stoking the Creative. Yeah, we're going to turn on those creative fires inside of you and make your life light up in a different way. Well, we're out of time. We'll be here same time, same place, broadcasting from Anchorage, Alaska. Donna Siebel here. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.